Robin Daly, and this is the Yes to Life Show, dedicated to all aspects of integrative medicine for cancer. The show is named after the UK charity Yes to Life that's been helping people with cancer to access integrative medicine for well over a decade. If you want to find out more about the charity, go to yestolife.org.uk. Today's show focuses on the work of another UK charity, Dimbleby Cancer Care, which was bringing integrative medicine techniques and thinking right into the heart of NHS oncology at Guy's and St Thomas's Hospital in London, long before the term integrative medicine was even coined. It was set up by the Dimbleby family following an enormous response by the British public to the loss to cancer of Richard Dimbleby in his 50s. I met Nick Dimbleby, sculptor brother of Jonathan and David, when his daughter Grace was being treated alongside my daughter Bryony, and we've kept in touch ever since. I called in at his home in Devon to get a trustee's view of Dimbleby Cancer Care and its work. Hi Nick, really nice to see you again. Thanks for tea and a warm welcome. And I just wanted to talk to you a bit about Dimbleby Cancer Care and about your splendid new centre in London and find out what's been happening with the charity. So you've been a trustee of the charity for many years, and I understand you're now an honorary trustee.
Yes, I've just more recently taken a back seat, if you like.
So you've had plenty of involvement now. So the charity has chosen to focus a significant amount of its attention on giving cancer patients complementary medicine. So what is it about complementary care, particularly in the hospital setting, which is where your attention has been? Why does Dimbleby Cancer Care, and why do you think it's so important?
Well, I suppose if I went back to how we started, the reason we started was my father was a patient at St Thomas's in the 1960s, and he was a privileged man. He was in the private wing, and he had all the medicine that was available at the time, and a lot of care, we separate care and medicine, which is, right. You know, which is a sort of paradox. Obviously, they're both part of care. Mm. But in those days, you were given some medicine and you were looked after admirably by the nurses, but there was no care in that extra sense that we try to take for granted, which is various complementary therapies, psychological care, something beyond the actual medicine. At the time, my father said, I'm so lucky because I get all this attention. My wife can drive in every day. I have a room to myself. He said, but the only thing I still don't have is a comfortable pillow. And so my mother beetled off to buy him some pillows, and he said, here I am. I wish that ordinary patients, as it were, on the wards, and those were wards in those days, rows of beds, no privacy at all.
Absolutely.
So he was very aware of his privilege and his good fortune. And when he died, a lot of money was given in lieu of flowers and so on by a very generous public who knew him through his television work. We very quickly raised almost £1 million. Wow. Again, in 1965,
that was
a lot of money.
That was a lot of money.
We sort of thought, heavens, what are we going to do with this? So we did have in mind a chair of cancer research, which was set up. So that went fine for 10 years. We then went on gathering money, not through actually making a great effort to raise money locally, but money just came in through bequests. The people who knew my father had left money in their wills.
A fantastic start.
So we just sat there and took it in. So then the next stage was, what do we do? So obviously the care side, which we knew was being neglected, or at least not neglected, because again, good nursing is about care, but it's just a number of extras that we thought we could provide. So we started by asking for a room at St Thomas's. We got, unbelievably, something bigger than the broom cupboard,
right.
which we set up in. And people thought it was very odd, but My mother had a lot of clout there because of my father being so well known and
yes.
and having died there. She really pushed for attention, so she went straight to the top. You can't do that now.
No.
You go through 7 committees to get anywhere, and it drives us sometimes of
quite time.
Being very patient. Mm. So anyway, we got eventually a very nice room, and in that space people could come and just have quiet, nothing to do with the hospital. It looked like someone's sort of sitting room, mm-hmm. comfy sofas, we had curtains, nice flowery curtains. We had a library. We had a day centre where people could come and do all manner of different things each day.
Mm.
So it was providing people with a sense that the hospital was more than just where you came to get your medicine. And of course the survival rates then weren't anything like as good as they are now. Now we talk about people living with cancer. Then it could be very bleak for people and families, especially in Lambeth.
Mm.
So it naturally expanded. So we had a day centre, and we were then supplying psychological support. People needed to talk, and the nurses didn't have time to talk. The practitioners, the doctors, accepted this and referred patients to us, which is very important. We had their trust and support.
Did that take a while to happen?
Yes, it did. And we were within the hospital, and we've always stayed within the NHS for that reason.
Mm.
Yes, it did take time. And we had one or two. My father's doctor was progressive, a wonderful man called Ian Churchill Davidson. There were some old school types there,
mm-hmm.
Who thought, yeah, we cut it off, get rid of it, get rid of the problem. We'll set you back on your feet in no time, sort of thing. Not realising that a lot of people benefit in medicine from feeling cared for in a different way, not just treated. Again, it's something now, 50 years on, that we take for granted, although it's still very underfunded. And we just expanded really on gradually. We got a toehold in Guy's Hospital because the Guy's and St Thomas had joined together. So we started a group there. And we've still supported the research we do with the money. We've set it up. I think it's a good fund. But mostly the funds now go straight into, and we have very little overheads. It's run by family trustees. Not all family members, but a number of my brother Jonathan's director. So we try and save every penny we can to put it into the care.
Mm.
And perhaps the best thing that's happened recently is the NHS at the new centre at Guy's have actually taken over almost all the funding for what we do. So from having sort of begged a space. Mm-hmm. All those years ago, to do something extra. It's now considered part of the treatment. I really do believe in that. It's not just paying lip service.
Well, that's really important because, I mean, yes, to life is all about integrative medicine, which means, well, whatever helps, it doesn't matter what label it's got on it, is it actually going to help the people? And a good integrative medicine, of course, is about all these things working together, not... You go to Southampton to get your complementary care, somewhere else to get your surgery. You need them both in the same place, ideally, and it doesn't happen that much in this country. So it's really great that they've completely taken on board that what you're offering there is something that patients appreciate and that does genuinely help them.
I should say probably that we're different to Yes to Life in that we are working within the conventions, if you like, medical conventions mm-hmm. of the NHS, but I think that we are... in thinking terms, a way of expanding that medicine through the psychological care, through groups, for example. And we've set up tumour groups. So you might get a group of men with testicular cancer meeting in a pub in Lambeth,
right.
Which would be Why does that matter? What do I want to talk to someone else for? Well, it worked, turns out that it's a very important part of healing. Feeling you're not alone, and so on. So it's not so much that we're bound by the NHS. So we're not a sort of fifth column, if you like, in any sense. We're working.
But nonetheless, you're bringing change. Over a period of time, you quite clearly changed the attitude at the hospital to make complementary medicine from being ridiculous stuff.
I think
that's actually important.
There was no similar. There was nothing else like that going on then. That's another thing to remember, because we're now used to Macmillan,
50 years ago,
Click Sergeant, and so on, that they're doing either complementary care of some sort or hospice care, which again is another. There was hospice care, but that was. It's the point of living well with your cancer. Mm.
There's a certain sort of attitude that goes with hospice care, which is like, well, we've done all we can.
Yep.
These people, so anything that helps them at that point is seen as okay.
Yep.
But yes, you're right, it's different when people are still hoping to live anything, and or at least live a period.
Yep.
Then they're not necessarily seen in the same way. And of course, exactly those same things could be just as helpful to them.
Yes.
As you point out, your dad was a bit of a legend. I'm old enough to remember that he was a real voice of the nation. And I think I'm right in saying that he was one of the things that maybe resulted in this huge amount of funds coming back, was the fact that he was the first public figure to be public about the fact he had cancer. Is that true?
Yes, no, that is true. Again, that seems rather...
It's extraordinary to think of that. It was only being 50 years ago that everybody hashed it up.
But, yeah. I mean, I think you think of it something like the whole gay thing, which now...
Yeah.
Whereas then, people didn't mention the fact that people were gay.
Of course not.
And they didn't mention the fact they had cancer.
Right.
And it's taken a long, slow time, and yet there's still an unease about both those subjects.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, it's all very well, you can be out and there and so on, but it still can be very uncomfortable.
Yes.
And I think it was like, if you imagine, he was a major figure saying, I got cancer. It was a bit like coming out, if you like,
yes.
Saying in public. And the fact that it hit the headlines because for that reason.
Mm. Well, obviously it was an important thing to happen, and that maybe that outpouring of support for the Dimbleby Fund afterwards was exactly because of that, as much as anything. I mean, obviously he was a much loved figure, you know, he would have just been another person who died, but this must have been very novel at the time that he actually said that.
And I think also he went on broadcasting after he had his cancer. He did a panorama, I think in 65, and then when he died, my brother David had to give a sort of announcement on the before the news,
right.
9 o'clock or some time like that, and to say about the fact he'd died and so on. And then there was a memorial service in Westminster Abbey, which was overflowed into the... You know, it was extraordinary.
Mm.
I can't... I mean, I was 18, 19, and it was... very strange for me, because he was such a public figure that the father was disappeared almost.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's I mean, that's why it was. I think it did have the takeoff that it had. It's harder now to keep it going. In that respect, the fundraising is hard work. We've started doing a lot of fundraising.
Yeah.
You'll know.
All charities do. It's the big deal, of course.
I think the thing is that the smaller charities manage to run themselves on a very small percentage, a very small proportion is spent on administration, and so we trump every penny we have straight back into care of one sort or another.
Mm. Great. Well, look, I want to ask you a bit about your splendid centre, which is recently opened in Guy's. Maybe you can tell me a bit about what its aims are, what's offering.
They came to us about 7 or 8 years ago, when they started the idea of having a cancer centre in London, And I represented the trustees on the steering committee for the new building, and it, like all these things, it got a bit bogged down. But from the outset, we were to be thought of as being as important as the architect, or the patients group, or the practitioners themselves. Right. Which was was an extraordinary
thing.
That shift. Mm. So we were consulted all along the way. There was a pause in the process, and we dropped out of the actual detailed discussions, because there are things I think which we've since, I shouldn't say put right, but we've enhanced the space that we've got, and we've been allowed to do that. But it's a triangular building, which is quite tricky. It's a day case centre, so it treats all cancers in the South London area. But it's been running now, I guess, for about 4 or 5 months. It's working very well. We really carried on with the team that we had before. We've got more space. I think we've got about 8 rooms in all there. We've got a sort of meet and greet area. And at the outset, this was open to the foyer area of the hospital on the ground floor. And we hummed and hawed about this area being open, but we felt that the patients would benefit from having some sort of screening. So after the building was finished, we then put quite a bit of money into designing and building a glass. It's a beautiful glass wall, because I designed it actually. It's a fluid, sort of curved glass screen.
Right.
You can see through it, so you can see what goes on behind. It gives a level of privacy, but anyone coming in to the hospital at the entrance can see where we are. You can go in there. There's always 2 or 3 people at the desk or in the office. You can, if you just, are often referred by doctors or practitioners in the various, I think there are 14 floors. So it's a big place. It's recommended to people that they can come to us and get information. They may be in a state of shock about the diagnosis and just have treatment. So we have people who are professionals who they can talk to.
It's great to have that right there, isn't it?
Brilliant. Yeah.
Especially the doctors have been completely cooperative and sending people, recommending they come.
Oh, the doctors are absolutely on board with that. Mm. I mean, there's nothing worse than dealing with a very anxious patient who's had a diagnosis that's going to change their life.
Yeah.
And feeling, well, my job is to do the medicine. I can't deal with everything else. So I think that support means that putting the medicine into practice becomes much easier. Mm. You know that there, that any problems that might arise, not any problems, but an enormous amount of the welfare generally of the patient will be taken care of by Dimbleby Cancer Care.
Right.
But not as, it's not as a separate group, but as actually an integral part of the hospital. Mm. I think we do, have aromatherapies, we have this sort of water bath therapies.
Mm-hmm.
I think the daycare centre, there are activities, but I think they may now go on beyond the hospital. The people I know who've had cancer, my daughter had cancer on 2 occasions. I know that side of it for the parents or for a patient feels about like 50% of the business of having cancer is how you deal with it.
Right.
That and again, people talk about placebo as if it's a sort of cheat in some way.
I know, it's funny. Well, if it works, why does anybody really whinge about it?
There's been a lot of talk recently about it, and I think we provide acupuncture. You say, well, what do you want to prick people for? They've already got cancer. But it helps people.
It makes them
feel that it's possible, that other things are possible. It makes you, therefore, try harder for yourself, perhaps. That you can try all manner of things to if necessary, enhance the medicine that Yes to Life does, to sometimes do something quite different that isn't on offer in the more conventional sense.
Yeah, it helps empower people, basically, doesn't it?
That's
so they're not
the word.
Passive recipients of care, active patients.
And I think one of the things of going in to the cancer centre, the danger is that they've got screens. This is the modern way. They're four screens, and you go and sort of dial in your details.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit. It is like going to an air terminal.
Right.
And yeah, it's very easy to become a sort of unit once you go into the hospital. And what we try and do is that our decorations and things show that this is kind of home, a little bit of a home in the hospital that you can go to, which feels different.
Yeah. Very important. Great. All right. Well, look, I'm going to finish off. I want to leave some room in the programme to get down there and get my sleeves rolled up and find out what's going on. But I just wanted to lastly just hear what you have to say about the whole field of, I'm calling it integrative medicine, which is, you know, bringing together standard care with the whole raft of other things out there. We've both been in this business long enough to know that it's been really a long and hard journey, but it feels like there's a certain momentum gaining now. We're way behind some other countries, but nonetheless, it feels like there's a sort of mass building in this direction, particularly with the public, who now understands that a lot of these things really can help.
Mm.
And I feel we're over the hill, if you like, and we're starting to go down the other side now. Things seem to me they're going to change.
Well, you're very optimistic, Robin, if you think we're over the hill. I think it's this. I feel that we're still climbing, because I think there's a long way to go to understand what medicine is and what we talk about with medicine. We tend to separate the treatment, the medicine, the actual sort of pharma, if you like, of medicine, especially with cancer. Still treat it as if it's something quite separate from... We all have natural medicine in us. We have the ability to cure ourselves.
Right.
We are coping with cancer every day, but we manage it. We haven't got cancer, but our body is controlling. It's a very anarchic thing, the body.
Yeah.
Well, I see it as that. Medicine is... I think it's wrong to think of it just as something you sort of apply. It's something much more profound than that.
I would agree.
And so if something hasn't, in quotes, worked for somebody, then there must be a whole host of... We don't understand it. We don't understand everything about the way the body works, after all. So why should we have the sort of arrogance to say, this is the only way to do it, we'll do it like this. And if you look at it, it's changed hugely over the years. People have had to change treatments in all sorts of things, from the very early days of the Greek medicine. And we need to look at and not be frightened, and also treat outcomes or treat the analysis of complementary cares in a different way. They don't respond to the same science. They don't respond to the same sort of scientific analysis. You've got to find a different way of considering it.
Absolutely.
I mean, in the end, we're trying to get people to survive.
Yeah.
I mean, you lost your daughter. I remember that all too well. And that, I think, is what you made you think. There must be other ways of doing things. We try anything. It's a difficult area. That's why when you say we're over the hill, I think it's certainly... I mean, it is amazing for us to have this support for cancer care at the centre of treatment at Guy's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, it's a very nice memory to my father.
It is,
had that in place.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to leave it there.
Pleasure.
And I'll just take the opportunity to thank you also for your being stalwart early trustee of Yes to Life and helping us get the thing established at the beginning. That was brilliant.
Well, that was very good to be on right at the beginning of that.
Mm.
And I'm very glad that Yes to Life is still working.
Yeah. Thank you. Next, I'm off to Guy's and St Thomas's Hospital to see the new Dimbleby Centre for myself. And I'm meeting the director, Robin Pritchard, who's going to show me around.
Good afternoon, Robin. Thanks very much for giving me a little tour around your very smart new centre here.
Okay. So the Builder Cancer Centre has been open for a year. So it opened last September. And as a charity, the building cost £160 million. We, as a charity, invested £2 million in the capital build. And part of that was to secure the future of the Dimbleby Cancer Care Services and kind of secure our position within the trust. And we've since invested over £100,000 in the kind of interior fit-out of our own area. So the whole concept of the building was to make it not feel like a hospital. So they brought together all the oncology outpatients stuff from the two hospital sites into one building. So there's radiotherapy, the next floor up, chemotherapy above there. So for the first time, rather than people having to go to different parts of the hospital, it's all in one building.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was to create somewhere that didn't feel like a hospital space, that was built very much with and designed with a patient reference group, so coming from the patient, not from the straight from the clinicians. So they've tried to create the building where there's not a huge amount of signage around, a little bit sort of colour-coded, so all the floors are different colours, so that you should be able to come in and kind of know, oh, I'm radiotherapy, I'll go where the orange
right.
dots are.
Right.
So the whole concept was this sort of welcome area that people can come in, and there's sort of wig fitting shops, a cafe, and sort of not a formal reception desk, but much more of a kind of, you come in, you sit down, you have a cup of coffee, you speak to one of the volunteers, and you find out where you've got to go. And then the Dimbleby Cancer Care area, and when we were over at the other side, at St Thomas's, they had an amazing suite of rooms with an amazing view of the Thames and the Houses of Parliament, but it was kind of hidden away behind a couple of swipe doors.
Right.
So unless you were specifically going there, you never would have stumbled across it. So we've lost the view. We're on the ground floor. We're in a really busy area.
Yeah,
but,
right in the reception
but
here. Yeah.
We've gained the profile, essentially, and the...
Yeah.
Way of actually being at the heart of the building.
Yeah.
So what we did, when we took over the space, it had red doors everywhere because the ground floor is coded red, frosted windows, very little natural daylight. So we worked with a local designer to try and sort of humanise the space a bit, really, and create a much more softer feel to it. It was supposed to be all open plan. And we were very concerned right from the start that it would be, you know, the cafe was going to be here, people making coffee,
right.
people eating their
people
lunch.
People feeling very vulnerable, maybe.
Yes,
yeah.
It's not the right thing. So
yeah.
We fought tooth and nail to have this screening put in. So this was all designed by Nick.
Okay, this is by Nick Dimbleby. And it's,
yes.
it's a, just for the listeners, it's a kind of wavy glass construction with the round wooden pillars at the end.
And the whole idea was, especially working with the patient reference group, they wanted people to feel that they could just walk in, because you can go in and you can browse information, you can talk to one of the information nurses, or people come here for appointments. But they wanted it to feel very open and welcoming, and they were really concerned that if we were going to put a screen, that it was going to act as a barrier,
right.
where it would feel like a first class lounge that you didn't feel you were allowed in.
Okay.
So. It's been a lot of to and fro to get something that was kind of semi-transparent, but that when you're inside, it does feel a bit more of a cocoon.
A little bit separated.
But very much, if you're on the outside, if you're stood here, you can look in, and there's nothing that says don't come in here. You know,
right.
The floor's the same, so hopefully people do sort of just drift in. So we've got the information space, which
mm-hmm.
is, let's say, a drop-in information area. We give out all. We, as Dimbleby Cancer Care Charity, we don't produce our own information necessarily. We give out the best information that's out there.
Right.
So we work with all the other charities. A lot of the information isn't put in information because it's the best of its kind. So there's no point in us wasting money producing something that someone else is already doing very well.
Fair enough.
So what we're there to do. So as an information service, we're very much a signposting service, and we have. There's a team of four specialist cancer information nurses who are our information team, who will say sometimes they're just pointing people in the right direction, other times they can spend an hour, 2 hours with someone. And all the time you find people might come in thinking that they just want a piece of information on X, but actually when the team's spoken to them, they find out all the other things that they're that's available to them that
right.
they might not have. Like I remember the team telling me once that someone came in and her husband was having chemotherapy, and she came down. She wanted something on diet, and the team were there, so they sort of stopped her and asked her if she could help. And sort of 2 hours later, she went away with a whole wealth of information right. and found out about the complementary therapy that was available, not just to the patient, but actually to the carer as well.
Right.
Because they, I mean, that's a big part of what we do. It's supporting the people who are supporting the person with cancer. So it's not just about the person with cancer. Mm. It affects far more than, and sometimes the person with cancer can deal with something much better than actually the person that it's not happening to. So, all our services are available to patients and their families and their carers as well. Mm. So if we go into the space, so you see when we go in, like the acoustics change.
Yeah, immediately. Yeah.
And so it does feel like you're in a bit more of a safe bubble. So this is an area where people can come in and, you know, you can have private conversations in here. If people are upset, they can take them to other rooms, but it's very much, this should be a sort of a safe space where you can come in and wait for your appointment.
Right.
And so we have, and then off both corridors is the actual clinical rooms. So we have psychological support stored in these rooms, they're all busy, and the complementary therapies as well. This is in the complementary therapy rooms. So again, so we dealt with very much when we were looking at the space. When we moved in, there were red doors, dark grey floors, white walls, frosted windows. So we came in and we covered all the first thing we did was cover all the doors to get rid of the red.
Yeah.
And just try and bring a bit more of a kind of natural feel in.
Right.
And all the rooms are slightly different. So and the can't see inside of these rooms at the moment, but they've all got comfortable chairs, the counselling rooms have got wallpaper and table lamps and soft furnishings, so it's giving it that. And these rooms have absolutely, they haven't even got any windows at all over there. So we're just trying to create that kind of safe space that doesn't feel clinical, but feels that people can relax and feel comfortable in.
So the Yes Life show is all about integrative medicine for cancer, which means actually looking at the way that all sorts of different forms of cancer care can combine and improve the lot of the cancer patient. You're seriously embedded in this hospital, and Dimbleby Cancer Care has been here a lot of years. How many?
The charity's been, we're in our 51st year.
Right.
And I think the first proper day centre was opened here in the 80s, some 30 years
Amazing.
Ago.
Amazing, yeah. So I imagine you've gone from maybe being viewed with quite a bit of suspicion in the early years as to what you're up to, you know, bringing this completely different kind of thing.
Yes, interestingly, I've just been in a meeting today with one of our research advisory board who was saying that we were the first people that pioneered psychological support for cancer patients.
Right.
It just was something that just was not done.
Right.
And still it's the most underfunded
Absolutely.
Part of research, palliative care research in the UK at the moment is psychological support.
Yeah. So there you were, rank outsiders in a way when you arrived. How does your service now sit in the cancer unit here? It's a fantastic new cancer unit.
Yeah. So we're completely embedded within the cancer treatment pathway, if you like, here at Guy's and St Thomas's, and we've been actively had some kind of day centre here for the last 30 or so years. And now, you know, it was all the services that we run initially were funded solely by us. And then over the years, the NHS have taken over that funding. So we now work very much within partnership with them.
Mm.
And we're developing new services or expanding the services. But it's essentially NHS funded now.
That's
with sort of topping up from us as a charity and looking, and you know, a lot of what we've done here at the Cancer Centre in the last 2 years is, you know, they were given a space where they were going to run services, but we've come in and enhanced that space and made it fit for purpose, really, in a way that it wouldn't be without sort of our input.
Yeah, so it's a huge change, really, and so do you feel that the attitudes amongst the health workers have changed very much towards the place of complementary medicine in amongst cancer care?
Absolutely, yes. And it's seen, you know, we have a lot of what the team here do is measuring the outcomes as well to actually constantly provide evidence of the importance that it's not just a nice add-on.
Mm-hmm.
It's essential, it's a vital part of cancer treatment and care. Sort of beyond, you know, during treatment and beyond treatment as well.
Mm.
And especially, you say, a lot of the work that we do is not just with patients themselves, but it's the impact on the families, the carers, the partners as well. Again, I've been meetings today talking about there's all these statistics that show, especially if there's been a bereavement, you know, the impact on the carer afterwards, the morbidity and mortality rates in carers post bereavement are huge. So there's a lot of work that we do here.
It's unsurprising, but I didn't actually know that.
Yeah. Mm.
So, you know, those are two very different ways you described complementary therapy there, which was, yeah, in the early days, and still a lot of people would see it as a nice to have.
Mm.
But actually, you're now starting to describe and to
yeah.
give the evidence for the fact that it's an essential yeah. part of cancer care.
And it's around, and it's a looking at, you know, people might maybe be getting excellent medical treatment, but the side effects, the pain, the anxiety, all have a huge impact on the way that the sort of success of the treatment. And actually, if and through complementary therapies and through psychological support, if that can be addressed and alleviated,
mm-hmm.
it makes the person much better able to cope with, you know, what's actually happening to them and the treatment and the cancer itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, clearly complementary medicine can offer fantastic relief from some of the most grueling treatments there are around, let's face it. And that in itself is fantastic. But I imagine with having been embedded here for so long that now you're somewhere in this kind of treatment pathways now,
yes.
that you're actually really helping with standard procedures in some way to make them work better. Do you want to give us a few examples?
Well, I know. I mean, so we have people can book appointments to actually have the treatments here, but the complementary therapy teams also work up on the chemotherapy wards
mm-hmm.
and on the inpatient wards. And you might have someone, you know, a lot of the time on the chemotherapy wards, someone who is there and they're in a lot of distress and they're having, and sometimes they can't find veins because people are so tense and they're, you know, it's actually, they're not able to go through with the treatment. And our nurses will go up there and give them some reflexology or a foot massage and it calms them down and it enables the treatment to go ahead. And it might just be a half hour, 20 minute, half an hour session that they're able to do. But it has a huge impact, and the nursing teams on the chemotherapy wards know where our team are. If they've got someone in distress or someone who's not coping, then they will call them. And
so you're getting kind of direct referrals.
Absolutely.
From the ward, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, so I'd like to sort of get a feeling for where you see the service going in the future. You know, what additional, you've got a big new thing which is starting up and you're probably finding your way with what you've got now, but I'm sure you've got also some ideas of what you'd like to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the future. Do you want to tell us?
We've just, so guys in St Thomas's have just taken over a new cancer centre down at Queen Mary's Hospital in Sidcup. So we're working in partnership with Macmillan down there. So there's a Dimbleby Macmillan support centre that we've just opened.
Oh.
So we're looking to expand, which is run by the team from guys in St Thomas's. So we're looking to expand what's available down there. So that centre's mostly run by volunteers, but we'd like to be able to put more funding in so actually we can put some key nursing teams down there as well.
Mm.
And I think, you know, I mean, there's always more that we can do here at Guy's and St Thomas's. I mean, the waiting lists, more and more people are being diagnosed, more and more people are surviving, more and more people are living longer with cancer following treatment. So the demand on care and support services is, you know, we can never meet it, really. One of the other things we're doing is we've just developed a new website resource, so it's an online database, and we're starting to slowly roll it out, which will become a nationwide resource. It's called cancercaremap.org, and you'll be able to go on there and type in your postcode, type in counselling or complementary therapies or massage or wig fitting, and it will come up with a list of services that are available to you in your area, because we're very aware that here at Guy's and St Thomas's we offer a gold class service that isn't available in other places, but there are lots of smaller organisations around the country that are doing offering bits and bobs, and actually and what we can do is if we can help join up and give them all a platform, it brings the awareness around supportive care, sort of gives it much higher profile and hopefully enables people to actually access what's available to them. So I think one of the problems is a lot of the time, even within this hospital, sometimes people aren't aware of the services we offer. Not because they haven't been told, but because at the time they're told, all they've heard is, I've got cancer.
Right.
And so it's about sort of signposting people and making people aware at different stages of what's available to them.
Right, so you could summarise your aims as wanting to get the kind of services you offer to many more people.
Yes, and if we can't do it ourselves, we can help people access the other organisations that are doing it around them.
Right.
And also hopefully, as we start to build up a map of the UK, we'll start to see if there are holes or if there are gaps. We can either look to plug those gaps ourselves or to do some lobbying or to work with other organisations to kind of fill the holes in.
Great. Well, you've got obviously massive experience behind you to know how to do this at this point, probably more than anybody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks very much, Robin. I really appreciate talking to you.
Lastly, Camilla Weiberg, complementary therapist coordinator, kindly agreed to tell me a bit about work at the Coal Face in the centre, directly supporting people with cancer.
I just had a few questions I wanted to ask you about being a bit more on the front line, actually helping patients. And so firstly, maybe you'd just like to give me a quick roundup of what's on offer here if people come.
So we offer complementary therapies, and within that we offer massage, reflexology, aromatherapy, Reiki and acupuncture, as well as relaxation and stress management courses, shorter workshops to kind of help people manage their daily lives on their own. And then we have psychological support for individuals, for families, for children. We do benefits advice. We have information support nurses.
Great. So a very, very broad range of staff.
Yeah,
excellent. Okay, so in amongst the complementary therapies you offer, are there any that you would call like a front runner? You know, things that people either ask for most or you get the best feedback from in terms of how much it helps them?
I think it kind of depends on what someone's interested in and into, but massage is always on the top there. And since we've started our acupuncture about a year ago, more and more people are cottoning on to the fact that it actually is really beneficial for some of the symptoms, management of sort of kind of side effects as well.
Interesting, when it's kind of, it's such a sort of foreign approach in a way, acupuncture is so foreign to us here in England in a way. But it has got some of the best evidence for the fact that it does actually help, isn't it?
It does, and it really is quite effective. So we're hoping that maybe at some point we can increase the provision that we have of that.
Great. So do you have any idea what proportion of the people who come through the hospital use the service?
In terms of people who receive chemotherapy here,
mm-hmm.
I think we're at about 9%.
Right.
But we could probably be about 30%.
Right. But that's the limitation is what?
The limitation is numbers of staff, hours in the day.
So that's how many people would like to have it?
Yeah.
Mm, interesting. Okay. And what would you say are the most important ways in which you're able to make a difference to the experience of people having cancer treatment in this hospital?
I think the kind of services that we deliver are services that really empower patients in a time when a lot of the decisions are made for them. They can choose to come and have our service. It's also something that we've found in terms of feedback is a beneficial to managing side effects of treatment. And also, the kind of feedback we get is it makes us feel more human again. Thank you for giving us back some humanity where they've become a cancer or they've become a treatment, something like that. They're now back to being John Smith.
Right, excellent.
At least for the hour that they're with us.
Very important though, very important.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome.
That rounds up my visit to Dimbleby Cancer Care. It's heartening to hear what's been achieved, particularly in the arena of changing attitudes towards complementary medicine. Kudos to Dimbleby for being in for the long haul and for making such a practical difference to people's experience. As usual, you can find links to material mentioned in today's show on the Yes to Life website. Just go to yestolife.org.uk and click the link to the show on the homepage. I want to finish this week's show with something a little different. Yes to Life's first 10K fundraiser is on the 24th of September in East London, and you've still just about got time to sign up if you'd like to support us. In my experience, often a short sponsorship campaign can be just as effective as a longer one. I'm going to have a quick chat with a couple of the entrants for the run who have their own cancer stories to tell and their own good reasons for supporting Yes to Life. First is Peter Engelsent.
Hi, Peter. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
Great.
A diagnosis of incurable cancer a couple of years ago was the signal for you to make some seriously radical changes in your life. Can you tell us briefly, if that's possible, what you decided and the most important ways that this has affected you?
Well, I think, first of all, that my cancer diagnosis actually has given me back my life in a strange way. And certainly my feeling was, given that it was incurable and everywhere, what was the point in sort of going the conventional route without really thinking about it? So I decided in the end to completely change my life, diet, exercise, meditation, and to actually get rid of everything in my life that wasn't supporting me. And that's been the 2 years. And I can say honestly now that I feel happier, healthier, and really enjoying life at the moment.
How great is that? So, look, I believe you're very passionate about the importance of patient choice. Would you like to tell us why?
Because I think that certainly what I experienced, I was given no choice. And when I muted that I'd like to go away and think about it and maybe not go the conventional route, I was really, it was almost like I came up against some quite hostile bullying. And certainly they were very, I was in no uncertain terms as to what would happen to me if I didn't go their route. And I did kind of have that enough energy to get up and stand up and say no and walk out. And that really turned things for me. Mm. And what I think is important is that people have access to information out there that they can do, mix and match. They don't have to do everything conventionally. They can find good holistic treatments or diet changes to support what they're doing, because ultimately it's to support your body through whatever you're going through, however is best for you. And unfortunately the health service just doesn't have that information to hand. And I think it's very important that there is a change, and I support anything that embraces a holistic view of cancer, to be able to inform people so they can make their judgment and not just be in a state of fear pushed into doing what everybody else does, because we're all individual and cancer is individual as well. And I feel that's a really important point, that oncologists and the National Health Service need to understand. They're only given a limited arsenal to fight this disease with. And it's really doing anything that helps promote opening up that situation, because people who are diagnosed with cancer have to go the national health route. They can't afford, really, to go to a lot of these clinics or to health practitioners. They don't realise what is at their fingertips that's not going to cost them too much.
Mm.
And I think that's also important.
Thank you. Okay, well, look, the Yes to Life 10K run is going to be quite a challenge for you, I understand. So why do you want to go through this? And why do you want to support the work of the charity in this way?
Because it's something I can do. It's something I enjoy. I love walking. It's been part of my fitness programme. Getting outside, getting in nature. It's kind of like a meditation for me. Walking is my form of meditation at times. And it's something I can do, and to raise some money to help Yes to Life, who then help and open up the possibilities for people in my position. And that's why I'd like to do it.
Okay. Well, that's great, Peter. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us.
That's okay. Thank you.
And now I'm going to talk to Joan Faria.
Hi, Joan. Thanks a lot for talking to us.
Hi, Robin. It's nice to be with you.
So I believe the Yes to Life 10K is going to be your longest run to date. So it's going to challenge you both physically and mentally, I imagine. So as someone who's had cancer yourself, what's inspiring you to do this?
Yes, I've been regularly running 5K since my cancer diagnosis, but this is my first 10K, and I'd been thinking of challenging myself to do 10K for a while, but I didn't feel I was physically up to it till recently. As for inspiration, well, I'm not a natural runner, and I do find it difficult every single time I run, but there's a simplicity in running that I really love. It's just me and in nature, and that's become more important to me since having cancer. And whenever I'm finding it hard going, I think of how fortunate I am to be well enough to run. Mm. You know, I had some times during my cancer treatment when I was quite ill in hospital with neutropenia, and I would have loved to have been able to be outside in a park. And I also have friends who would love to run too, but they can't due to the progression of their cancer, or maybe they have secondaries in their bones and they've been told they can't run. So whenever I run, I think of them as well, and that makes me grateful to be there.
Mm. Great. Well, it's brilliant you're doing it. So, like many others we know, having cancer spurred your interest in the whole world of healthy lifestyle to the extent that I believe now you've actually trained as a nutritionist. So could you tell us how important you think lifestyle interventions actually can be for people with cancer?
Oh, I believe they're incredibly important. Not least, I think that for someone with cancer, conventional treatment sort of strips you back to a physical body, and it can be really hard to keep hold of the person that you were beforehand. So for instance, taking time to prepare nourishing food for yourself, that can be really empowering at a time when your very identity as a person is being challenged. You know that you're taking steps to look after your body and your spirit, and I think by doing that you're sending a message to yourself that you are worth looking after. But on the more scientific side, there's increasing research supporting the value of a healthy environment and metabolism within the body, and we can achieve that through lifestyle interventions. One of my favourite TED talks is Mina Bissell demonstrating when tumours are transplanted into a healthy microenvironment, they revert to normal cells, and that's just incredible. Mm. And we influence that microenvironment by the nutrients we put in our body, by the way we can increase the removal of toxins when we exercise, and by whether we can reduce stress hormones in our bloodstream. And, for instance, we know that chronic inflammation drives cancer, determining how cancer cells signal to other cells around them and how they might metastasize. And nutrition, exercise, meditation, these all impact enormously on inflammation. And then, of course, the role of lifestyle interventions in helping with cancer treatment side effects is well established. And I know you've had people on your show recently talking about using herbs or nutrition to combat side effects. Mm.
Great. All right. Last, I just wanted to ask you, I hear you're taking the whole family along with you. Brilliant. so I'm just interested to know that why you and your family feel strongly about supporting Yes to Life and the work that we do in particular.
Yes, my husband, who's a sort of a club runner, so he'll probably do quite well, and my eldest son are running too, and yeah, they'll finish way ahead of me. My son Finn did a two-week work experience placement in the Yes to Life office in July, which he really enjoyed, and he found that very interesting and inspirational. So that was why he was keen to join up before he could persuade me to do so.
Right.
But a cancer diagnosis, you know, it affects the whole family very deeply. And I have three children, and they were young when I was diagnosed. And they saw me completely fall apart, mostly because of the fear I experienced. And in the years since then, my family have seen how I have completely changed my life. And that's really thanks to the integrative approaches I've been able to take, which have made me feel empowered, helped reduce the fear, and I believe they've kept me well. And some of those approaches I was only able to take because of finding a practitioner through Yes to Life to help me, and Yes to Life founded some other approaches. And I didn't really know about integrative approaches to cancer when I was diagnosed, and it took me quite a while to learn about them and to find my way to all the extra things I do now to help myself. I really wish I'd known sooner at the point of diagnosis. So we as a family, we want as many people as possible to learn about the work that you're doing, so that if they're ever in that situation, they'll know where to look for help.
Great. Thank you very much indeed, and lovely you could talk to us today.
Thank you very much, Robin.
Well, I hope that's helped inspire you to want to sign up right away, in which case do go to yestolife10k.org, that's yes2life10k.org, where you'll find the full details of the event. Thanks very much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you'll be able to listen again next week. Goodbye.